And just like that, another football season has come and gone. I'm sure you all are just like me and you watch the Super Bowl on Sunday. And after you see that green and white confetti raining down after the Philadelphia Eagles absolutely splattered the Kansas City Chiefs, that feeling of, I call it football depression, sunk in. And it hit me late that night, and I realized we're not going to have football until spring games start around April, and we're not going to have real football until that last week of August, beginning of September. And man, it's not a fun time of year because we have a long ways to go until football season. But if you're listening to this show, you know college football season is year-round, and it doesn't stop. And don't think just because it's, I don't know, mid-February that we don't have anything to talk about. Trust me, we have plenty to talk about on this show. Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. I'm very excited about this show. Have a lot of content. I have a pretty interesting note on a specific team that I was reading about today in an article on ESPN. I think that team needs to be discussed. Also have some 2025 sleeper teams. Who are some teams that are not on your radar that probably should be, that could potentially make some noise come the 2025 season? I heard an interesting philosophy today that I haven't quite thought about. And when I heard it, my jaw hit the ground. I'm going to bring that up. And to cap off the show, I want to address a change that I would make if I was college football commissioner, and a change that I think should happen starting this year. But I will end the show with that, so stay tuned. If you haven't already, please make sure that you follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I can be found at Parker_Kelly10. And also, this is the most important thing. Please subscribe to the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. It can be found if you type in The Game Nashville on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your listening materials. It can be found under The Game Nashville. Please, please, please subscribe so you never miss an episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. Now that that's out of the way, let's talk about football, shall we? I read a story today on ESPN.com. It was a very, very well-written article by Max Olson. Here's the title. Has Texas Tech built a college football power in the portal? Now, if you're like me and you hear Texas Tech, you probably think we're talking about basketball. Texas Tech has historically been pretty good in college basketball, especially in recent years. When I think of Texas Tech, that's what I think about. But let me just start off by saying, I believe that they're about to make some serious noise in football this upcoming season. This article goes through everything dating back to a little bit of the end of last season about Texas Tech's plan as far as recruiting in the portal is concerned. I'm not sure if you keep up with this, but I do. I keep up with the transfer portal recruiting. And it seemed like when that portal opened on December 9th, every post I looked at, this guy's committed to Texas Tech. This guy's committed to Texas Tech. It was every post. It seemed like every single post I saw from Hayes Fawcett and On3, Texas Tech was landing some big commit. Let's get into the nitty-gritty. It has been hard for Texas Tech to find an edge in recruiting. Since Mike Leach was fired in 2010, Texas Tech has not had a top 25 finish in the AP poll. And the record hasn't been very good over that stretch either. They actually have never won a Big 12 conference championship, yet alone make the conference championship game. Texas Tech has, since Joey McGuire, their coach, has been hired, has shown improvement. Finished 8-5 this year, finished with 6 wins in the Big 12, the first time they've accomplished that feat since 2008. They've spent over $240 million into renovating their football facilities. They've made progress in Joey McGuire's third year at the helm of the Texas Tech program. I really like Joey McGuire. I feel like he's a coach that doesn't get enough recognition and doesn't get talked about enough. But what he's been able to do at a program like Texas Tech, and just the fact that an article like this is being written about them in February about Texas Tech, guys, we got to keep our eyes peeled. We got to keep our eyes peeled for the Red Raiders come 2025. So, the article says at the very beginning that their goal going into December was to spend $5 million on bringing recruits in from the transfer portal. Cody Campbell, this is a name that you should familiarize yourself with. That's Texas Tech's billionaire booster and leader of the Matador Club, which is the Red Raiders NIL collective, because all these teams have NIL collectives nowadays. Another name that you should familiarize yourself with is James Blanchard, the Texas Tech GM, general manager, because we're hiring general managers now in college football. And this is not really some foreign concept, because I will argue all day long that college football is still very different from the NFL, but there are qualities of the sport that are becoming similar to the NFL. And this is one of them. Alabama has a very prominent GM. North Carolina just hired a GM after they hired Bill Belichick. They hired Michael Lombardi, who worked with Bill Belichick in New England, won 3 Super Bowls with him. It is important, I believe, to adapt as the game adapts. Hiring a general manager takes a lot of pressure off of the head coaches. I believe it's much harder to be a head coach in the college game than it is the NFL. Because in the college game, as I've talked about extensively on this show, you have to deal with not only the X's and O's aspect, like offense, defense, special teams. You got to go out and recruit, not just high school, but the portal as well. Got to fundraise for your team for NIL money. You got to have dinners with boosters and in-home visits with recruits. It's a lot. There's a lot on a head coach's plate. Having a good GM, somebody that you trust, takes a lot of pressure off of the head coach. James Blanchard at Texas Tech is a guy that Joey McGuire trusts. What I really liked about James Blanchard that was outlined in this article, I'm not going to go through everything because I think it's definitely worth the read. But James Blanchard spent months preparing for that December 9th transfer portal window to open up. It takes a serious amount of planning, or it took a serious amount of planning on Blanchard's part to know what kind of guys they were going to go after in the portal. They set a goal of, Joey McGuire said this, I believe it was late November, he was holding a press conference and he was asked by reporters. He said that their goal was to get approximately 10 recruits from the portal. You want to know how many they landed this past offseason? They went out and got 17 guys from the portal. And these aren't just guys that they just willy-nilly went on a shopping spree. These were guys that Blanchard and the entire scouting department at Texas Tech watched film extensively on, gave scouting reports. And I think it one interesting note about this is when they're scouting these guys, and they have to scout guys with extra eligibility, guys that they know that they could get and come into their program and you'd be able to supplement them into the roster and they'd be able to contribute right away. I think it's really interesting because a lot of these guys listen to what the NFL scouts are saying about some of these prospects. If there's a guy who is maybe a borderline 6th or 7th round pick, the philosophy nowadays is, why not come back to college? If you have eligibility, of course, why not come back to college? Because you'll probably make more in college than you would be making on a rookie contract in the NFL. So Blanchard and his team, they look at film of guys who have, they know will have eligibility after the 2024 season, guys that have a good rapport with scouts, and they put together a board and they go after those guys. Texas Tech ultimately believed they were a few plays away from competing for a Big 12 title and a berth in the first ever 12-team college football playoff. And they were right. Texas Tech finished one game shy of first place. I mentioned the 6 wins in the Big 12. All of those games were close. The only game that wasn't was the Baylor game, in which they got blown out. But other than that, all of those games were close. One of the things I love about the Big 12 is it is not, if you're looking for a college football national champ to come out of that conference every year, you're probably looking at the wrong conference. If you're looking for elite teams like the SEC or the Big Ten provide, probably looking at the wrong conference. What I love about the Big 12 is the parity, because towards the end of the season, there were 9 teams tied for first place that had a legitimate chance of getting to that Big 12 championship game, Texas Tech being one of them. They believe they were a couple plays away. They bring in 17 players from the portal, 7 of which were top 75 players in ESPN's transfer portal rankings, and they finished with the 2nd-ranked portal class. I think it's pretty safe to say nobody outside of Lubbock saw this coming. Nobody. I didn't see it coming. The total cost of all those players that they were able to get, $10 million. So they spent $5 million more than what the goal was. But when you're bringing in high-caliber athletes like Texas Tech was bringing in, it's worth it. And especially if you have a billionaire as a booster who's willing to help you out. But like I said, it took months of meticulously watching film on all of these guys. I just want to kind of read some of the players that they were able to get. Illinois State offensive lineman Hunter Zambrano was a preseason All-American at the FCS level. North Dakota State safety Cole Wisnowski, another preseason All-American. Both of those players had season-ending injuries last year, so we weren't able to necessarily see their full potential. But Texas Tech was able to see it in the film that they watched. And, again, they were preseason All-Americans. They went out and got Georgia Tech edge, or former Georgia Tech edge, Romello Heights, a guy who had a lot of production last year. One guy that was mentioned in this article that was high on Blanchard's list of potential recruits was Marshall's Mike Green. I thought this was really interesting because Mike Green led the country in sacks last year with 17 and had a breakout season. And now that he's declared for the draft, he's actually projected to be a day one pick. But that was a guy that was high on the list, and Texas Tech might have had a chance at getting if Mike Green didn't declare for the draft. Another note that I thought was interesting in this article was their philosophy. Joey McGuire's philosophy, James Blanchard's philosophy is if you get one of these recruits to come to campus, don't let them leave without committing. And that is the right philosophy to have, because a lot of these guys, you're competing with schools like LSU, Alabama, Texas, all of which probably have, I'm not going to say probably, they do have better resources than you. And if you let them get to a visit with those schools, you never know what's going to happen. It outlines a story in this article of a Miami, Ohio transfer wide receiver, Reggie Virgil. He had visits lined up to Oklahoma, Florida State, and Florida after his Texas Tech visit. And, you know, those coaches were calling him, offering him buku bucks, Corvettes, Lamborghinis, all of that. And after the Texas Tech visit, he shut down his recruitment and committed right away. Now, I could get into so much more, but what I want you to understand is Joey McGuire is serious about this upcoming season. And if you don't believe it, just go read the story. Look at what they were able to do in the transfer portal. Now, I've been very staunch that I believe in college football, the key to success is recruiting high caliber athletes out of high school, developing them, supplementing through the portal, and that's how you win a national championship. It's what Ohio State did this year. It's what Michigan did last year. That's what Georgia's been doing on their dominant run. We've seen a couple teams try this, and it hasn't necessarily worked out the way that they hoped. Ole Miss, being the best example, went 11-2 2 years ago, the school's first 11-win season in program history. They beat Penn State, and I believe it was the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. And then this year, you know, push all their chips into the middle of the table. They go out, and Lane Kiffin gets titled the Portal King, and they go 10-3, missed the 12-team college football playoff when the expectation was that Ole Miss was going to make the playoff and have a shot at a national title. They didn't make it. Colorado. Colorado is actually an interesting case study because Colorado has not recruited the best out of high school, but they've been killing it in the portal. Coach Deion Sanders, I would say that is a case where their philosophy of recruiting out of the portal has actually worked. If you remember where Colorado was a couple years ago, they had one win. They went 1-11. And Coach Prime's first year, they went 4-8. Now, you look at that 4-8 record and you think it was a terrible season, but I'd argue actually the opposite. They were able to improve their record by 3 wins. And if you consider where that program had been, I'd say that was a pretty decent season. And then this year, going 9-4, having legit debates and conversations that they could potentially earn a spot in the 12-team college football playoff. Now, ultimately, they fell short, but they were in the conversation until the very end. That's a case of this working. Now, it's one thing recruiting out of the portal and expecting to compete in the SEC. It is another thing to do it in the Big 12. There aren't many, if there really aren't too many elite teams in the Big 12. So will this work for Texas Tech? I don't know. But there is a lot of hype that is surrounding Lubbock since they have been killing it in the portal. And we'll just have to see where it goes. That was fun. I love getting to talk about teams that aren't typically talked about a lot, especially in Nashville, where our station is located. But I love this stuff. I am a college football junkie. I hope you are too. And chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are a college football junkie just like me. But we have a lot more to get to. And I wanted to talk about sleeper teams in 2025 because Texas Tech, I would consider a sleeper team. But I want to get into some other sleeper teams, teams that may not be on your radar, but could legitimately make some noise in the upcoming 2025 season. Real quick, needed a quick swig of water. The voice gets pretty dry sometimes, especially during the winter. But Illinois. Illinois is a team that I really think could be a legitimate sleeper come 2025. Illinois finished with a 9-3 record in the regular season last year. And if you remember, they beat South Carolina in the bowl game. South Carolina was a team that a lot of people were saying should have been in the 12-team college football playoff. And Illinois beat them and got to 10 wins. They're returning their quarterback in Luke Altmyer. Brett Bielema has always had good defenses at Illinois. That's something that I'm not worried about for Illinois next year. I'm excited to see Luke Altmyer's progress with another year in the system at Illinois. And I'm not necessarily one that believes year-to-year momentum, because I believe each year brings a completely different story. Just ask Florida State. But Illinois is a team that I could see making some noise this year. Syracuse, another one. I know they lost their quarterback in Kyle McCord, but I really like what Fran Brown has done at Syracuse. Syracuse was another team that was in the upper echelon of ACC teams last year, and that's not saying too much because the ACC isn't necessarily known for being the strongest conference, but he made Syracuse relevant. They were also able to get to 10 wins this year as well, finished with being ranked in the AP poll. I'm really interested to see what Syracuse can do this year. I really like Fran Brown, really like his mentality coming over from Georgia, all that he was able to learn from Kirby Smart. Fran Brown was actually the secondary coach at Georgia. And usually when you're climbing up the ladder, you go to coordinator and then to head coach. But he completely skipped a step and went straight to being a head coach. So that shows you kind of how much Syracuse believes in him and the promise that he could bring as a head coach. This is a team that I'm really excited about, because when this team is good, college football is a lot better, and that is the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Dylan Raiola, year two, he showed many flashes last year of why he was such a highly recruited player and a five-star coming out of high school. Able to start as a true freshman, looked, I thought, kept them in a lot of games. What really killed Nebraska in the past was it wasn't their run game or their defense, but it was the lack of, one, a passing game, and two, the amount of unforced turnovers, interceptions. Think about how many one-score games Nebraska has lost prior to last year, and that was primarily because of inconsistency at the quarterback position. Dylan Raiola was able to solidify that last year, and what did we see? Nebraska made their first bowl game and won their first bowl game, but had their first bowl game appearance since 2016. And what do we know about, I'm going to coin this the Matt Rhule year three rule. Here's what it is. Matt Rhule, when he started as a head coach at Temple, in his first season in 2013, they went 2-10. Second year in 2014 went 6-6. In his final year at Temple in 2015, they went 10-4. So they went from 2 wins to 10 wins over the course of 3 seasons. At Baylor, when he was at Baylor in 2017, they won one game, went 1-11. 2018 went 7-6. 2019, 11-3. And that was the year they beat Georgia in the Cotton Bowl. So, went from one win to 11 wins over the course of three seasons. Now at Nebraska, 2 years ago, went 5-7. This past season, went 7-6, made a bowl game, won a bowl game. So what does year three bring for Nebraska? Well, I tend to believe in Matt Rhule. I think he is a phenomenal coach. I have a lot of confidence in him. I have a lot of confidence that Dylan Raiola is going to be a stud at the quarterback position. I have a lot of confidence in that defense, even though their defensive coordinator, Tony White, left and went to Florida State. I have a lot of confidence that Matt Rhule is going to be able to make a great hire. He's already made that hire. But I have a lot of confidence that Nebraska is going to be just fine on the defensive end. I love them bringing in Dana Holgorsen to be the offensive coordinator. I think that is going to be great for Dylan Raiola. And I'm really excited to see Nebraska in year three. Here's, for those of you who may think that I don't talk about the Group of Five enough, here you go. UNLV. Very excited about UNLV, the Dan Mullen era getting underway in Las Vegas. UNLV, it's very typical that we see in college athletics nowadays that when a coach leaves, that it is a free-for-all. All the players leave. They enter the portal. They go to a new school. But with UNLV, when Barry Odom took the job at Purdue, sure, UNLV has had some players that have moved on, have entered the draft, have went on to other places. But a large majority of their roster has stayed put. And that's because you bring in a guy like Dan Mullen, who has had success at the SEC level. You bring in a guy like Dan Mullen to work with a pretty much largely put together roster, I think UNLV could be one of those teams that is competing for a playoff spot at the for the Group of Five, that auto bid. We'll have to see. They had three losses last year, but two of those came to Boise State. And in that first game with Boise State, it really came down to the wire. Second game and then the Mountain West championship game, not so much. But I believe UNLV is a team that can make some noise next season. Florida. Florida is another team. I've been a huge fan of Billy Napier. I have defended Billy Napier to a lot of people. A lot of people don't understand the mess that was left behind for Billy Napier to clean up. And that takes time. And that's something that not a lot of people have, is time and patience nowadays. But the school and the fans and others surrounding that program have been patient with Billy Napier. And I'd say in year three was a success. All the talk going into last season was how much of a Hunger Games schedule Florida had. And while that is true, their over-under win total was 4.5. And they had 8 wins last year. And that included a bowl game win over Tulane. And they found their quarterback of the future in DJ Lagway. DJ Lagway, as a true freshman, was one of the best deep ball throwers in the country. The ceiling for DJ Lagway, sky high. And you cannot tell me, if you watched Florida football last year, you cannot tell me that they were not a different team with DJ Lagway as the starting quarterback compared to when they had Graham Mertz. Completely different team. Really excited to see Florida in year four with Billy Napier and year two with DJ Lagway. His first full season as a starter, granted nothing happens with injury. TCU, another team from the Big 12. TCU is a team that I'm very excited about. They returned their quarterback in Josh Hoover, who actually finished 7th in the country in passing yards last season. With Sonny Dykes, and really just in the Big 12 in general, you're going to get exciting offensive play. TCU is a team who flew under the radar. They kind of have been since their national championship appearance against Georgia 2 years ago. They finished 9-4 last year in a bowl win. TCU is a team that I expect to be in the mix for that Big 12 championship game. And they're a team that I don't think is going to get enough love and enough respect. I'm certainly going to talk about TCU in other shows because I'm very high on Josh Hoover. I'm very high on that offense. And we'll just have to see how that defense holds up their end of the bargain. But TCU is a team that I'm very, very excited about. Now, this is a team that might get some of you riled up. I can't believe I'm about to say this. Texas A&M. Texas A&M is my final sleeper team for 2025. Hold on, everybody. Let me explain. Texas A&M has always had the resources. What do we know about Texas football? It's just a little bit different down there. Texas A&M has always had the resources. Recruiting has never been the problem. Having talent on their roster has never been the problem. What has been the problem at Texas A&M? And I would say coaching. Because when you have talent, like we saw at Texas A&M a couple years ago when they finished with the number one overall high school recruiting class, and you don't do anything with it, that ultimately falls on coaching. And they have had inconsistency at coaching. Kevin Sumlin, Jimbo Fisher. Now you bring in a guy, Mike Elko, who you brought in last year, who, if you paid attention to him at Duke, when he was at Duke. Duke's not a football school. When you talk about Duke, there's usually one thing you're talking about. What he was able to do at Duke was actually quite remarkable because they have significantly less resources over there than some of the resources you have at other schools. What he was able to accomplish at Duke, very impressive. Now, he returns to Texas A&M. If you remember, he was actually the defensive coordinator at Texas A&M a few years ago before he took the head coaching job at Duke. Now he returns here. So he already has familiarity around College Station, already has kind of a lay of the land, but now he's the man in charge and he gets to run things his way. I have a lot of confidence in Mike Elko. Now, I know a lot of you are probably saying that Texas A&M has been a conversation for a long time, and they've never really done anything with it. I understand. I've witnessed Texas A&M consistently underachieve, but they've also never had Mike Elko. I'm very high on Mike Elko, and Texas A&M is a team that I expect to make a leap this season. All right. I was listening to an interview today with Josh Pate, who does a fantastic job over at 24/7 CBS Sports, has Josh Pate's college football show. He's one of the best in this business, and he's a guy that I actually hope to get on the show. Now, we're going to try to make that happen, but we'll just have to see. He did an interview with John Sumerall, who's the head coach at Tulane. And an idea was proposed by John Sumerall. When a coach signs a contract, signs an extension to a university, and there's a certain amount of money involved, if they want to leave and go take another job or they get fired, there is usually a buyout that is involved. People are very familiar with buyouts because you remember when Jimbo Fisher got fired at Texas A&M, you know, his $70 million buyout. Buyouts are in there for a reason. So when a coach leaves and goes to another school, typically that school has to pay that buyout. Here in this day and age of college football, while it still is and will always be the greatest sport on the face of the earth, we can all agree that there are flaws in college football. One of those being there's not regulation with NIL and the transfer portal, and players can come and go as they freely choose to do so. John Sumrall, in this interview with Josh Pate, suggested an interesting theory and idea that I actually think should be implemented in the sport. We have coaches' buyouts, but what if a player wanted to leave and go to a different school, and he's already getting paid by the school he's currently at? What if there was a player's buyout too? I heard this. Again, jaw on the ground. That would change so much. That would solve, I would say, a lot of this player movement, and which I think that players should be allowed to transfer. They should, because we wouldn't have stories like Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts. Players should be allowed to transfer. But if you're going to 3-4 schools during your college career, that's crazy excessive. Player buyouts, if these were implemented, don't you think that would solve a lot of that? That was an idea that I can't believe I never thought about before. But we have coaches' buyouts, so why not incorporate player buyouts? That's just mind blown. But I think that would solve a lot. Now, I mentioned this also briefly on the last show, how we have to move the national championship game up to January 1st. I'm going to explain that a little bit deeper here to conclude the show. This year, the national championship game ended on January 21st, I believe. It's January 20th. I spoke with several college football fans, and it seemed like a lot of people, just the mass public in general, didn't even know the college football national championship game was being played on January 20th. And if you go look at the ratings, and I'm not arguing that ratings are everything, because they're not. Watch what you want to watch. Enjoy what you want to enjoy. But the ratings were the lowest they had been in a long time. And I believe there were two reasons for that. One was lack of awareness that there was even a game being played, which is a problem in the first place. And two, I believe that there was a fatigue, because it seemed like the time the regular season ended and then you play your conference championship games and bowl season starts, we had the first round of the college football playoffs. The time from the first round of the CFP to when it ended up, the last game being played between Ohio State and Notre Dame, there was too much time in between. A lot of people will tell you that regular season that we witnessed in 2024 was probably the best season, most parity we've seen since the 2007 season. We have to be able to ride that momentum into the college football playoff. I believe the college football playoff should start right after conference championship games that first weekend in December. We have to ride this momentum straight into the playoffs. And growing up, this is why I'm so romantic about college football. You have the New Year Six. Key words, New Year's. Meaning, they're either played on New Year's Eve or they're played on New Year's Day. I believe that is the pinnacle of the sport, is that day, New Year's Day. The college football national championship should be played on New Year's Day. And the only place that I think that it should be played, and this is my case, we should play the national championship game at the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl is, to me, the most sensational, aura-filled, when you're getting pictures of it, photogenic. It is the, it's like a scene, and I haven't been fortunate enough yet to attend this game, but one day I will. When you're watching it on TV, it's almost like you're watching a movie. It's something out of a book. Like, it doesn't even seem real. And this year, the Rose Bowl was played in the second round of the college football playoff, which to me was disrespectful, because the Rose Bowl, literally, it's the granddaddy of them all. Shouldn't a game like that be held to the highest standard and be valued with the utmost importance? The Rose Bowl just has everything that college football is all about. And the national championship game, you played it at these different neutral sites. I've never been a fan, really, of neutral site regular season games. I know you have to have them in the postseason. But why not play it at the Rose Bowl? Why not play it at the greatest event our sport has to offer? And why not play it on New Year's Day? Because that way we're able to ride the momentum of our sport into the college football playoffs and be able to finish in a reasonable amount of time. If you would have asked 12-year-old Parker, you know, what if I told you that we were going to get more games in college football? I would have told you that's great. However, now that I'm older and I've been a fan a little bit longer, more doesn't always equal better. Yes, we have more college football. Yes, I'm going to I'll watch the games even if they're played in March. But there was a little bit of a fatigue, I will say, when you have the game being played the third week in January. Because what is sacred about our sport is those 12 Saturdays in the fall and also bowl season. But again, more doesn't always equal better, and that's why we need to shorten the time frame in which these games are played. If you want to have the 12-team college football playoff, fine. I've explained my reasoning why I'm not necessarily a fan of it, but since it's here, I'm not going to complain about it. But we need to shorten that time frame in which the games are played. And I believe that would be a great fix to college football. Again, so much was being discussed on this show. We have a lot more coming up. Just because it is February, it doesn't mean anything. We have tons to talk about. And if you are craving and you're missing football as much as I am, you're going to want to tune into these shows. Again, make sure if you haven't already, one, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Parker_Kelly10. And remember to subscribe to The Game Nashville. And then under Game Nashville, you'll find The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. Again, we'll have another show coming probably this weekend. I'll keep you updated, but make sure to tune in for that.